You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports podcast network. I'm Chris Manning, your host and the site manager at FearTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. If you aren't already, you can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Megaphone, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. A five-star review is the best way to support the show. And you can find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Writes. On today's show, I'm joined by one of the very best friends of the pod. She's now a reporter at the Toledo Blade, still a quasi-member of the Fear the Sword family. It's Ashley Bastock. And she's here to talk about the Cavs' biggest strengths, their weaknesses, and some playing with pace comments from Tyronn Lue. Ashley, what's going on?
Thanks for having me on, even in this new job that I'm still in. Glad to know that I'm still welcome on the Fear the Sword pod.
Look, it's not going to, I don't know who I'm going to like make jokes about or like talk about how Ernest Seti is at games anymore. It's going to be a different vibe this year. We're just for transparency, this podcast is going up a couple, like several days after we've recorded. I'm recording this on Friday, October 5th. I have not yet been to the queue this year, obviously, for a game. I am not, like, ready for, like, how weird that vibe is going to be around the arena this year. I think it's just going to be a really weird environment.
Yeah, it is. I mean, especially for people like you and I who have only covered this team when LeBron has been here, which is kind of crazy to think about. It's like, who let me in the door?
Yeah, who's, like, let this young kid who's just like feeling like anxious the whole time, like into this arena where LeBron James is here. Who was like startled, like out of his mind when you saw Kendrick Perkins like flip off Kevin Durant last year. It was just like, what the F did I just see? Like, and then Jason Lloyd's just like chasing after him. Like, it's just sort of like watching stuff like that. Like, Jason's not even there anymore. So it's super weird. And David McMenamin is gone. So it's super weird.
Yeah. The beat in general, as far as like, how many reporters there are and just how many, you know, reporters there are night in and night out. And I think we talked about it right after LeBron left, like by far the most interesting night of the season is going to be when the Lakers come to town in November. That's going to be the largest media contingency. That's going to probably be the only time we see a media contingency that's been similar to the last 4 years. So that will, in some ways, feel probably pretty homey, even though it's a much more stressful environment with, you know, just the craziness that is going to be surrounding LeBron's return.
Brian Curtis at The Ringer wrote actually a really good piece about the LA press corps around LeBron, and I would recommend, I'll put that in the show notes, but everyone should go read that. It's a really interesting piece, and there's a lot of things about it that I found very similar to what we saw with the Cavs. But actually, let's look at this Cavs team. When you look at it and think about it, what do you think is the team's biggest strength? Because as I've done my preseason research, done my sort of preseason internal guesses and predictions and prognostications about where this team is headed, I've had a lot easier time identifying things I think they'll be bad at than good at. So tell me, let's be positive. Let's try to like see if there's something we can like come up with that they're going to be good at. Like, what is something about this team or a couple of things, if you have any, that you think they actually should consider a strength?
Well, I think when you look at, you know, and obviously tomorrow's game, they're sitting pretty much everybody, so we're not going to get to see it in action. And again, since we're recording this early, Saturday's game against Boston that's coming up that our listeners will have already seen and probably been able to analyze. That notwithstanding, when you looked at like the starting lineup from the first preseason game in Boston, I think their ability to push the ball is actually pretty promising. And that in years past, as we know, pushing, getting out and running in transition and also defensive transition has not been too great, because this was consistently one of, if not the oldest team in the league over the last 4 years. But having younger guys, and that's something I talked to about with Ty at practice earlier this week, and just their ability to kind of get the rebound and push in transition one through five, no matter who is rebounding the ball. If it's Jetty, if it's George Hill, if it's Concepts, if it's Robin Hood, if it's Kevin, if it's Larry, like pretty much any of those guys have that ability. So that's probably, I think, going to be one of the biggest differences, especially between the beginning of last year and this year. You know, beginning of last year meaning before the trade deadline when we dealt away some of all those older guys, Isaiah Thomas, Dwayne Wade, those guys that didn't really want to run in transition anymore and had no business really doing it in the first place. So I think that is for sure going to be one of the strengths, at least it better be. Otherwise, I don't know how this offense is going to get points on the board.
I think that's a good one because I do think they have a lot of interesting athletes. You have Jetty, who with the Turkish national team, his whole role is to just push the ball up the floor. Look, Kevin can be a fast break starter. I think we saw in that first preseason game, he actually was dribbling the ball up, which was an interesting wrinkle, and he can throw those incredible lob passes. Colin Sexton, he has a lot of things I don't know what he's good at yet. The dude plays at 100 miles an hour and can create things with athleticism. Larry Nance, Tristan Thompson run the floor very well. Jordan Clarkson loves Jordan being Jordan Clarkson and will like go for things. Like I think they will at least try to compete. Rodney Hood can play a little bit up tempo. I do actually think that this team has an interesting mix of wings, which is they're not the type of bigger 3-and-D type E wings that I think you would sort of like, but I do like the collection of wings that they have. You have Korver as the shooter and kind of the mentor there. Jetty can do a lot. I think Hood could be in for an interesting year and has a big opportunity to really create for himself. Nawaba I like a lot. JR still around. You have Clarkson will play some two. Hill can play the two, except for Sexton, who will probably be a one. Because I just don't know what he looks like off ball necessarily. At this point, I think they have a lot of guys that can slide through a couple spots. And for a team that really does not have a real three, does not have a real small forward on this team because LeBron obviously left and Jeff Green also left, that is at least valuable, but that they will be able to have guys switch and play, I think, a couple spots in the wing. And I'm curious to see what combinations, either as you're thinking about 2-3 combos or 1-2-3 combos, that Ty actually ends up liking this year. Because I just don't think we have a read on sort of what he would go to yet, because LeBron has played, you know, the vast majority of those three spot minutes, and now he has to have someone else do it.
Yeah, for sure. And that, like, kind of, in some ways, they're kind of positionless, right? And, like, in certain positions, and especially in that three guard aspect, and that's actually something that Channing talked about earlier in the week at practice as well. And but I mean, it's more than even just these interesting wing guys. As he said, you know, your centers, pretty much every center except Tristan and probably Larry, are capable of shooting threes. These guys that can play the five or the four, and who knows, we saw Larry expand his shooting range when he got traded here from LA last year. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him shooting, you know, some threes occasionally out there this year. But yeah, I think the other thing that is going to be kind of obviously detrimental right away is they don't have anyone on this team that is an ISO player at the level, anywhere near the level of LeBron James or Kyrie Irving. So that style of play that they've relied on so heavily is, for the veterans, I imagine, going to be something that's pretty difficult to break out of, especially a guy like JR, Kevin, Tristan, that have literally been there these entire, you know, last 4 years with LeBron, and now have to adapt to a completely different way of playing, in the sense that it's more shared, more movement, all that sort of stuff. But, you know, some of these versatile players that we have, and like you mentioned, especially the three guards, I think really suits that style of play more. It's just something that is still, I think, going to be an adjustment and meshing what the old guys used to do with what these new guys are learning now and kind of getting everybody on the same page.
I really, really like the fact that you pointed out that this is a team that really does not necessarily have a lot of guys that you can count on as efficient isolation players. It has been the team's identity. I think they are actively playing up that they're not going to play that way, and I think through one preseason game, they're not playing that way. But when you look at who would create shots on this team, it's like Rodney Hood is probably the best at it right now, and that's not a particularly strong guy as your lead shot creator. I think Jetty can do it. Ty said something about this on Friday at practice. It was like Jetty, he got asked like kind of directly about this, and I want to say he said Jetty, Kevin, G Hill, Jordan Clarkson, and obviously Rodney Hood, I think were the guys that he mentioned. I could be missing someone. I have to go back and look at the transcript or look at the video, but I like that's not a particular. There's no one proven as efficient and good at that yet. Like Kevin can be really good at it, but it's going to be in a different way. You don't really have anyone from the wing that's creating wing dribble penetration in the way that I think you would sort of want it to. That's not that's tough. I think that's a tough thing for the Cavs to kind of cope with, and I wonder how they try to compensate for it. And I wonder what I just think that's a weakness because we just don't know. And like right now, if Kevin Love is not the one like taking a shot in the fourth quarter, like I wonder who can go into takeover mode and who kind of is his running mate. Like I kind of, is it Jetty? Is it Rodney Hood? Like there's some hierarchy things I don't think we know yet. And that like what that sort of looks like as it plays out will be kind of interesting because Kevin can't do it all. And if he misses games or, you know, isn't quite the same player that the Cavs are hoping he's going to be, like I wonder what happened to the offense and it could get kind of ugly.
Yeah, and I think late last week, Ty actually was flat out asked about it. Who is your number two option? And he said probably Rodney. So that's literally the state of this team right now. And I don't think they know, but you know, when you hear that, it's funny to be like, really? Like the guy that had a total and complete meltdown in the playoffs? Like, yeah, I get it. He has some, you know, he kind of redeemed himself in that Golden State series for as much as a player can redeem himself during a sweep. But, you know, I think that there was enough, I guess, games last year where he was up and down and you didn't quite know where he was going to go. And whether or not that was related to injury or whether or not it's, you know, some larger issues that, let's face it, is probably part of the reason that Utah was willing to part with him and why they even moved him to the bench before they traded him here. You know, that's kind of, I think, though, where Ty is leaning towards, that he thinks, okay, this is a guy that is maybe the closest thing we have to somebody who can facilitate on offense outside of our point guards. But obviously with Colin Sexton, like you said, we don't really know all about what his strengths and weaknesses are because summer league, you have to take with a grain of salt. When I talked to Ty earlier in the week and, you know, I asked him about Colin, he said the biggest thing is for him to realize that he's going to make mistakes, but to learn from them and that he's been doing that so far. But obviously what that means, we don't know because we don't get to see practice. And then George Hill, you know, we kind of saw in the playoffs last year, his ability to make a pass and keep the offense going. But how that looks now without LeBron still also, I think, remains to be seen. So exactly who is going to facilitate on this offense? Yeah, I agree with you. It's pretty much a weakness, and at the very least it's a question mark if it's not a weakness, and that I think sort of de facto makes it a weakness.
Let's talk about Rodney Hood for a second. What are you expecting out of him? I think he obviously, I think out of any player on the Cavs, he has the most on the line this season. If he doesn't have a good year, he is not going to be in a position to get paid next summer as an unrestricted free agent. He basically has to prove that he's a double figures, multi, like $10 million player this year for him to really have the bet on himself work. And if not, he's going to be in a situation where he gets maybe frozen out when a lot of teams spend money on other guys, or maybe, you know, it takes the Kings overpaying him. But he's a lot on the line this year, and I think the Cavs are going to give him an opportunity to prove it, but there's nothing about him being consistent, nothing about him kind of holding up over a full season, being a lead or number two option, that he's never done that before. And it, like, I keep coming back to the idea that with the Jazz, he was in this team that does a really good job of developing wings, and he was like the one who didn't work out. That's a tough vibe for me thinking about what he's going to be in his first full year with the Cavs, and really in his first year with the Cavs under Ty as possibly the number two option on this team behind Kevin Love.
Yeah, and I mean, I definitely agree. I think it is kind of a make or break year from him. At the very least, it's a make or break year for him from a money standpoint. We all know how oversaturated the free agent market is going to be next summer. And if he does not have a year where he's produced it, where he produces consistently, and like you alluded to, where he stays on the court and isn't sidelined for an extended period of time with any significant injury, then there's not going to be a team out there that is willing to give him the money that he's looking for. And we look at the dispute he was kind of in with the Cavs and waiting to sign this summer as a restricted free agent, and just, you know, wanting like $2 million more or something. And it's like next summer, when all these guys are free agents, if he is not at the top of his game this year, there's not going to be any reason for a team to pay him. And, you know, we all know that there are guys that just for whatever reason do not adapt well to playing with LeBron. That's happened every stop in LeBron's career. I'm sure there will be guys that can't adapt to him on the Lakers. And I think Ronnie was one of those people. I think when he was at his best in Utah, it was because he was in a super structured system under Quinn Snyder. And obviously last year, the Cavs did not have any kind of structured system for him to be a part of. And really the last 4 years, it's been, as we've already said, a largely ISO heavy team with LeBron and with Kyrie when Kyrie was still here. So I do think, you know, you kind of can give him the benefit of the doubt as far as that goes. And maybe he just is one of those guys that can't adapt to playing with a player like LeBron who demands the ball and wants to facilitate and is going to, you know, set his teammates up in a different way than maybe Ronnie had in Utah. And I think that now without LeBron, it is his opportunity. And if he can't do it without LeBron, and he can't do it with LeBron, is there really a place for him here? I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see if they view him as a part of the future, because I do think long term him and Jetty sort of play the same position. Maybe the NBA being faster means you get away with a smaller three, but one of them I think would have to really show that they could guard the elite threes in the league, and I don't know if any of them really could do that right now. Maybe, you know, Hood could be an elite six man of some kind, but who knows? The other thing that's kind of going on right now is the Cavs, and Ty specifically, talks a lot about pace and playing with pace. And if this sounds like a familiar refrain, it's because it is. Ty is someone who talked about this a lot last year. You could go back and listen to his interviews, listen to any a scrum, I swear, once a week, Ashley, and you know this just as well as I do. Look, Ty is someone that is very, very, let's say, coy with the media, coy with us when he's talking to us about kind of what's going on. And him saying playing with pace never happened, partially, I think, because of LeBron. We see watch one preseason game. By the time you hear this podcast, they'll have played a couple more. But I find it really interesting that he's saying this again, and he's not, and to me, when he says it, he's not saying anything in terms of the actual words that's actually any different than what he said last year. That, to me, is just, like, kind of interesting, and I don't know if I expected anything different, but it's just, it just kind of is what stood out to me almost more than the fact that he's saying they're going to play with pace.
Yeah, I mean, it's a refrain that we've literally heard from him since he took over in January of 2016. You know, the famous anecdotes by now of him saying they were out of shape and putting them through, you know, full-on conditioning and the VersaClimber in the middle of the season when veteran NBA players are not really want to do those things. And, you know, I think even last week he got asked, like, what do you mean when you say play with pace? And, you know, I think in his mind, it's just kind of what I was talking about earlier, pushing the ball. It's not necessarily creating more possessions, but it's pushing the ball in transition and getting out and running, which, again, with a veteran team, that hasn't been something that they have been willing to do. So part of me now is like, okay, with all these new faces and these younger guys that he has, is that this just him kind of hammering the message home early, and there isn't a player of LeBron's stature anymore to kind of say, you know, no, like, I'm not running when I don't feel like it. And, you know, there were plenty of stories last year about LeBron picking and choosing essentially when to rest on the court because he was expected to play for 38 minutes or whatever it was. And yeah, there's not really anybody that can do that this year or can afford to. Even Kevin Love, I don't think the way that he plays that he can afford to do that. I mean, he probably could get away with it if he wanted to, but I don't know that he would be super effective doing that the way that LeBron still was able to produce numbers. But yeah, I mean, it certainly is interesting, and I also think that that is in Ty's mind part of playing this sort of positionless basketball, especially with the starting lineup and in transition.
Do you think this roster actually is set up to play faster and try to do more and try to play a little bit more with them? Like, is this a group, and we sort of talked about this at the beginning, but like, do you think this roster has enough where they can do that? Not just like do it and like execute it, but actually do it well.
I think it's still too early to tell because you do still have some older veteran guys that I don't necessarily know that when the going is gets tough, if somebody like Kyle Korver or somebody like J.R. Smith is are going to really
Fair or not,
be wanting.
JR's the one that I'm like, if they're down 15 on a random Tuesday, is JR gonna
Yeah,
like
J.R. is
bust his
not running
ass?
the court. Like, and that's when this system is going to fall apart. And you know, I think that the thread that this hinges on is the fact that they are younger than they have been. So in theory, you have guys who are more willing to do this. But if it starts at the top, as far as if it starts with the veterans and the young guys kind of see the veterans slacking, then it also is a maturity thing on the part of the younger guys and saying, well, if JR is not running, why do I have to get out and run? You know, there's also that element to it. So I just think it's too early, and you know, really we'll see in December or like the dog days of January how well this playing with pace thing really is going to be going. If you know, if they're not winning games and they're down, as like you said, if they're down by 15 and guys aren't getting out and running the lanes. But I think just from what we've seen, and again, obviously, since we're not able to watch practice, one preseason game to me in summer league is not enough to really determine that.
Yeah, Summer League, as we look back on, I think has been pretty worthless as far as like evaluating this group goes. Like, I feel like I learned nothing. I'll wrap it up on this, actually. When you look at this team, when you look at what do you think would be the most interesting story? I don't want to talk about what is better. I've talked enough about what is good for the team, what is best for the franchise long term. I think my take that the Cavs would be better off getting their pick. And being a lottery team again, it would be better for their health long term, regardless of what that means for ticket sales or whatever. When you think about what would be the most interesting story for this season, what storyline in terms of how the Cavs play would interest you the most?
I mean, for me, right now, I think it is the development of Colin Sexton and what kind of point guard he's going to be. Obviously, rookie point guards in the NBA are pretty prone to make mistakes, just given the position and giving all the responsibilities that come with it, and how different the NBA game is from the college game. And, you know, we're talking about a 19-year-old kid. So I think Ty is, you know, Colin is lucky in the sense that he's playing for a coach who is a former point guard that I think can, you know, kind of guide him and has kind of been there before. Even though, and I know you and I have talked about this in the past, the Cavs did have two like kind of large player development losses in, especially in Phil Handy dealing with the guards and obviously Vitali and the bigs who've kind of almost, you know, a majority responsible for Zizic's development last year. But you know, I think that that for me is going to kind of be the thing that I'm going to be watching throughout the season and how and what areas are currently improving. And yeah, like kind of like what Ty told me is he makes mistakes, is he learning from it? Like, is he not making the same mistake repeatedly? I think that's going to be kind of big. And as far as well, along kind of on the opposite spectrum, another storyline I'm really interested in is this addition, re-addition of Channing Frye and him kind of being in what I assume is going to look a lot like the role that James Jones was in when he was here with LeBron, and kind of being the voice of reason among the players and the guy that maybe the rookies will listen to. And, you know, if he's not getting onto the court a lot, how is he affecting the game in other ways? So I think those are the two interesting stories for me on the opposite ends of the spectrum.
I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to blow out the first one. And by the way, Channing's going to get like a lot of time to like read his comic books and like text Richard and like whatever else he like does. Like he's going to have a lot of time. He needs like some, he needs like chat with James Jones about like what he should do with his free time. But I think player development and how that affects the mood of the team, even if they end up being bad and missing the playoffs, and how the Cavs franchise and how Ty approaches it is the story to watch this year. Not only do they need to develop Sexton, but they need to, I think, develop Osman. I think Jetty has some kinks in his game he really needs to work on. I think you look at Ante Zizic, it doesn't even look like he's in the rotation right now, which is a little odd, but I think he's someone you need to try and develop. Like, you also could argue you need to develop Rodney Hood, and I would argue that. I think if the reason they go and get a Sam Decker, even though I think there's not a ton of upside there, I think you he's a younger guy who you got for basically nothing, and you want to see if you can turn him into anything. I think that is the type of thing. You want to develop guys like that because it means you aren't, you might not have the draft equity or the free agent dollars to go get that. Those are the type of guys. And you go further way down the list, you look at Billy Preston. He's completely raw. He's nowhere near being an NBA player. But if you this two-way deal, I believe it's just the 1 year. Maybe you could take it. It might be 2 years, but I'm not 100% sure on the details of his specific contract. He, like, can he in Canton? I mean, he's going to be with the Cavs, I think, practicing and stuff until November, when a month from now when the Charge season starts. Can Nate Rankin, can the Canton Charge staff, like, balance their desire to, like, win games, but also get Preston the reps and structure that he needs? Like, this is the real test for that. No shade to John Holland, who's a very nice guy and like, seems, like, very well-liked by all of his teammates. And Lennon Perates, who was, like, very nice when I talked to him last year and seems like a good guy and had, I thought, some good moments in the G League last year. But Billy Preston is, like, the type of two-way guy the Cavs should, I think, be going after. He's also the case study of, like, how much development can they actually do and what their culture sort of results in. Because there's, like, there's a lot of potential there. That was a high-level prospect coming out of high school that had a wacky thing situation with Kansas and going overseas for a little bit. And he's a long ways away from being an NBA player. Can they mold him into something and get a steal there? I want to. If I was going to rank who I'm most curious to see what they look like, at the end of the season, starting from now until May, when the Cavs season is done, Preston. I think Sexton and Osman are clearly 1 and 2, but I almost would have Preston ahead of Zizic in terms of I just want to see where he ends up, and that's just because of the process of that is going to be so fascinating to me.
Yeah, and it's like this, we've heard so much about player development ever since LeBron left, pretty much. And even before LeBron left, and when they drafted Colin Sexton, that was kind of a common refrain that was popping up.
I mean, it's from the phrase, I mean, going back to David Griffin, like he talked about signing Eddie Tavares as like a long-term play for the franchise, and like... Okay, didn't work out, obviously. Eddie's now playing in Europe, but they've talked about this, just have never quite executed it.
Yeah, so now it's obviously the question of, okay, well, can you guys actually do this? Like you said, yeah, we've heard enough about it now, and the test is going to be whether it actually happens and what these guys do look like a year from now or 2 years from now or... You know, however long they are with the Cavs, what do they look like at the end of their time here versus what they look like as rookies or in their first year with the team? So, yeah, I mean, I think that just because that's a narrative that the team itself has pushed so much is, you know, warrants a lot of attention and whether or not they are successful in developing these guys is going to be something to watch, not just this year, but in the coming years.
They will not be a great team again if they don't develop players well. That is a very obvious, I think, take, because they're not going to sign big free agents. But that's where the Cavs are at. Ashley, thanks so much. Thanks for coming back on and chatting. I know you're pulled in a lot of different directions covering stuff right now, but I know you how much you love the Cavs. You're a great guest to have. So thanks again for coming back on the pod.
Yes, of course, and I will have a Cavs preview dropping sometime next week. And again, we're recording this on Friday the 5th, so it should be dropping online sometime next week over at the Toledo Blades. So go and check that out if you want to hear what else Ty Lue had to tell me.
Yeah, Ty is. What do you make of Ty as a quote so far this year? By the way, I don't really have he seems sort of the same.
As far as quotes go, is that what
you
said?
Yeah, in terms of he just seems the same dude.
Yeah, he seems exactly the same post-LeBron as he was with LeBron here. And as you said, he's always been pretty coy with the media, so I don't see that really changing much.
I'm going to keep a counter this year. I don't know if I'll make it public or not. If listeners, you want to hear have me do this, but I'm going to keep an I forgot tracker this year. How many times Ty says I forgot in press conferences when asked about adjustments or anything like that, because he said it in certain ones last year four or five times, but it's a lot of it was LeBron related, so I don't know if that holds up this year. But you can find Ashley on Twitter at AshleyBastock42, and that'll be it for today's show. We're going to be back tomorrow with another episode looking at the schedule. We're going to get into the Pistons and later this week, and then also talk about Billy Preston, Ante Zizic, and a TBD third player with Trevor Magnani. I'm going to let him pick live, and we'll see what happens there. If you want to have your questions answered on Locked On Cavs, submit them to Locked On Cavs on Twitter or LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. And a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts guarantees your question gets answered. At Fear the Sword, please check out all our preseason stories and all the breakdowns we have going on over there. And thanks again for listening. This has been Locked On Cavaliers for October 10th. Talk to you again soon.